Dear friends, it's a pleasure to be with you. Tonight, my intention is to offer a preliminary analysis of the very complex subject of the protection of the cause of God, the way I understand it. And I intend to focus on the role of individual, hoping that this will stimulate your own reading and thinking about the subject. I like to begin by saying that protection is integral to growth and development of any living entity. Think of a newborn baby. Whatever elaborate plan the parents may have for his or her growth and development and education and marriage and future, unless without a plan to protect him from elements that affect his growth and development and sometimes his entire life, no other plan will materialize. This plan for protection, of course, includes measures to protect him from a number of factors that affect his development. And these factors change, the nature of it changes as he or she develops. For instance, in his early childhood, he should be protected simply even from his environment, whether there is a high temperature or a low temperature or strong winds. Later on, he needs to be protected from things like, for instance, association from the ungodly. Later on, you need to protect him or assist him from forming bad habits. When he comes to the junior youth or the youth stage, he or she would need counseling, consultations, and assistance for him to choose an appropriate direction of life. But in addition to all this, he also needs to be protected from the whole host of hostile enemies, if you like, in the form of bacteria and viruses that brings about or inflict him with diseases and illnesses. The cause of God is not dissimilar. Its growth and development and its march towards his destiny requires the cause of God to be protected from sources of harm, whether internal or external. Internal enemies, internal sources of harm to God, to the cause, one would say could include the covenant breakers, the individuals, the insincere individuals who seek to recast the entire faith into an ideology different from the intent of Baha'u'llah. There are also, of course, other people in the cause who are not enemies, but they may harm unintentionally, in fact, sometimes with good intentions, through their lack of wisdom. But these are all, one can say, sources of harm to the cause. The external enemies of the cause, as I last year mentioned to you, would be, according to Abdu'l-Bahá, the sources of harm, external harm, are either political, religious, cultural, or material in nature. So I like to very quickly and briefly touch on each of these issues and see what can we do as individuals. Now, before I go that, we also know that Baha'u'llah has established a covenant, a very unique covenant in the religious history with his followers. Dr. Mojer last year talked about the covenant in different aspects. One of the things he emphasized was this categorical promise that the covenant of Baha'u'llah will protect God from from various attacks. And while I don't want to dwell on it, I just want to share with you one such promise just to refresh our minds. Baha'u'llah says, "For the power of covenant will protect the cause of Baha'u'llah. It, the covenant, is the fortified fortress of the cause of God." So, therefore, the question is, with all these assurances, why do we, as feeble as we are, have to worry about the protection of the cause? Of course, the answer lies in the fact that that emphatic promise of success does not imply that the cause will not be attacked by enemies from within or from without. Our belief and our certitude in the power of God and in power of the faith does not imply that we don't have to do anything about it. As Baha'is, we are not the type of Baha'is who would say, enjoy the faith, enjoy the teachings, enjoy the Baha'i community, and Baha'u'llah himself will take off everything. Because if we do, we are definitely wrong. Otherwise, why would he, Baha'u'llah, have given us so much warnings, admonishment, encouragement, urging in the writings to arise and serve the cause of God, dedicate your life to the cause, and to protect it? So definitely, we have to realize that the covenant of Baha'u'llah is with each one of us, and the covenant has two sides, and we have to understand our side of the covenant, and as part of that covenant, as a party to that covenant, what is our role in protection of the cause of God. In the will and testament of Abdu'l-Bahá, we read this. The greatest holy leaf, it's a beautiful quotations from the holy leaf I want to share with you. She is probably one of the unique souls in this planet who was so much centrally involved in the transition from the passing of Abdu'l-Bahá to the ministry of the Shoghi Effendi. And she, referring to the will and testament of Abdu'l-Bahá, she says, this is a strong barricade built by Abdu'l-Bahá to protect the garden of God's faith. So in such a mighty document for the protection of the cause, we read this: the greatest of all things is the protection of the true faith of God, the preservation of his law, the safeguard of his cause, and service unto his word. And again in the same book, I counsel you, saying, guard ye the cause of God, protect his laws, and have the utmost fear of discord. So, therefore, protection of the cause of God is one of the most important things we can do. And as an introduction to what can we do as an individual for the protection of God, of the cause, let me share with you a few words about the biological defense mechanisms that is inherent in all the living things. And that will make a comparison between that and the cause of God. Defense mechanism in living things range from something very simple into very complex processes. At the basic level, all the living things have a physical barrier that acts as the first defense for pathogens to enter. Let's examine again the human body. Our skins, for instance, is a first barrier, physical barrier to entering, for the pathogens to enter our body. The skin produces special chemicals that actually kills many of the bacteria. Some of the other elements of this basic defense in human body are acts such as sneezing or coughing for flushing out bacteria from our body. The acid in our stomach, for instance, kills the bacteria that enters our body with food. The tears in our eyes digest and kills bacteria that enter our eyes and flushes it out, and these simple things. In the more complex aspect of this system, the body of the immune system of the body consists of a network of cells, tissues, and organs. These work very harmoniously together. Each has a job to do. Some of them have a specialized job to do, the result of which is the protection of our body. human body also has a system called the lymphatic system, a network of vessels that primarily carries immune cells and a liquid that bathes the cells in our body and also protects them. So this lymphatic system is in addition to our blood system. And these immune cells actually move around our bodies through both systems. And this circulation allows them to identify these pathogens and deal with them, kill them, destroy them. And it's interesting that we have two types of cells for protection. Some of them are the ones that produce chemicals, toxic chemicals that kills the pathogen, and some swallow them and digest them. I've just went through these little details just to later on compare this with the system of the defense in the cause. Now, this network of cells and tissues and organs, they work together in a very cohesive manner, and they actually communicate with each other. Depending on the severity of the infection, they decide different things. Now, the system, the protective system in the cause, you are all familiar with it. Quickly, we can say Baha'u'llah revealed his book, appointed Abdu'l-Bahá as his successor, established the Universal House of Justice as the center to which all must turn for issues that are not mentioned in the book, and bestowed infallibility on both Abdu'l-Bahá and the Universal House of Justice. He also established the institutions of the Hands of the Cause of God and the Institution of Spiritual Assemblies. And he called on individuals to protect his cause. So you see already a network, the major skeleton of the network is there, created by Baha'u'llah. Then Shoghi Effendi, Abdu'l-Bahá created the institution of the guardianship. Shoghi Effendi added to this system the institution of the auxiliary board members. The Universal House of Justice provided for the extension of the responsibilities of the Hand of the Cause by creating the institution of the counselors. The House of Justice has also created new institutions, such as the International Teaching Center. It has added assistant to the institution of the auxiliary board members, and so on. Now we have other institutions. The Office of Baha'i International Community was established during the ministry of Shoghi Effendi and expanded and continued by the Universal House of Justice. The Universal House of Justice has called upon a number of national spiritual assemblies to establish their offices of external affairs. These are all agencies. If you like, these are the tissues, special aspect of that body to do specialized work. The House of Justice has also, in addition, established other agencies such as the Office of Social and Economic Development, Institute for Global Prosperity, the Baha'i Internet Agencies, and so forth, all of which are responsible for activities that aid, in my opinion, in the protection of the cause directly or indirectly. Not all of us may immediately connect, for instance, between social and economic development and the protection of the cause of God. But I think the reality is different. I have a personal experience whereby in a country, a single well-functioning social and economic development was proved to be the main factor for the protection of the cause at a time when there was danger of attacks, severe attack on that document. So everything that we do are directly or indirectly affect the protection of the cause. So this complex and harmonious system of the Baha'i administration that functions to ensure the well-being, the progress, and the protection of the cause of God consists of individuals, special agencies, and institutions. And I think it can be easily compared to the network of cells, tissues, and the organs in the body. And as I said, there are quite a few similarities between the two systems, the human body and the faith. For instance, the human defense mechanism has two networks, the lymphatic system and the vessel system. Well, we have two. two systems of institutions of the councillors and the institution of the assemblies. Both they have distinct as well as joint responsibilities for the progress and the protection of the cause. The human system operates with two main strategies, namely to preventive and curative. The same concept we can think about it in the faith. Just as good nutrition and exercise and other sound practices promote physical health and development of the body, the observance of our daily spiritual obligations, our study of the writings, our service to the divine plan, our other community activities, and whatever we do to enhance our spiritual development make us stronger selves, stronger individuals, and therefore directly or indirectly enhances our protective system. However, there are also curative actions at times we have to take in the cause. Whether, for instance, a covenant breaker is shunned or expelled from the faith, similar to sneezing to shut out the the bacteria, or whether you go to the Baha'i international community to do a very specific job of defending the Baha'is of Iran or Egypt, such as an organ in the body makes a special has a special and specialized responsibility. The two operate quite similarly. During a crisis, as I mentioned to you, the human system is able to adapt its response to improve recognition and destructions of pathogens. And this improved response is actually then retained, kept, enabling the body to later on, if the same thing happens, it does a better job. They learn from the past. And I think in a way, the same manner, tests and difficulties that come as a result of persecutions of the faith and attacks on the faith makes us and the community stronger and makes us able to do a better job for the protection of the cause. And lastly, the fact that they are so harmonious in working together, this network in the body. They work together, they communicate together. This is something that we are learning, and we will have to get better and better at it. But really, we have to remember that Abdu'l-Bahá calls the human body, the entire humanity, let alone the Baha'i community, he compares it to a human body and says that the harmony and oneness must be as such that if one part of the body is harmed, the other parts will be concerned. So we have to work on this aspect of learning how to work together. And of course, it is wonderful to see that this new series of global plans are giving an opportunity to the Baha'i community to learn about the implications of how our activities have to be integrated, what does it mean, and it gives us opportunities and to the institutions to learn how to be harmonized and how to cooperate and communicate with each other better. Universal House of Justice refers to the power of covenant as this power, the House says, quickens every distinguishing element of Baha'i life. And so I think that if nothing else, that power of covenant must give us the motivations and energy to work towards this harmonizing our effort, our services, and our activities. Okay, so let's go now back to the role of the individuals for the protection of the cause. Of course, we know that, as I mentioned, institutions have a very special role to play for protection, and we are not going to discuss that. And the role of institution is quite distinct from individuals. However, the role of individual remains quite important and vital to the protection of the cause. I have been able to think of four sets of interwoven responsibilities that as individuals we can do to protect the cause. One is to do with our own firmness in the covenant. Second is to do with our adherence to principles that will govern our actions and reactions towards those who attack the faith. Thirdly, is our striving to live a life according to the rectitude of conduct or the code of conduct that we are expected to have. And fourth and lastly is to do with our services to the cause. And I hope that I will be able to go through this quickly. A firmness in the covenant, of course, that is the very first step. That is the first step, and everything else we want to do will depend on that. Listen to this, what Baha'u'llah says, the promise of Baha'u'llah for those who are firm in the covenant. For whosoever standeth firm and steadfast in this holy, this glorious, and exalted revelation, such power shall be given him as to enable him to face and withstand all that is in heaven and on earth. So naturally, that's our first step to be, work on ourselves to be firm in the covenant. Here is the promise of another promise from Abdu'l-Bahá to such souls. Arise with every power to assist the covenant of God and to serve in his vineyard. Be confident that a confirmation will be granted unto you and a success on his part is given unto you. By God, verily, the Lord of hosts is your support, the angels of heaven your assistance, the Holy Spirit your companion, and the center of the covenant your helper. So what else do we want? We remain firm in the covenant. The Holy Spirit is our companion, and the center of covenant, Abdu'l-Bahá, our helper. So being firm in the covenant, to me, makes us as in makes an individual like a sound cell in the body that we compared it with, or a solid brick in a mighty building, or a glistening tile in the golden edifice of the tabernacle of unity that Baha'u'llah has come to establish. So in order to be worthy of being a brick in that building or a tile in that edifice, we really need to be firm in the covenant. Our action towards the principles that we'll have to follow, that will have to govern our actions and reactions towards those who will attack the faith, let me start with the internal enemies. In terms of facing the internal enemies of the faith, our own firmness in the covenant, though essential, but is not enough. Abdu'l-Bahá says we have to be alert and vigilant to the possibilities of attack on the covenant by insincere individuals and groups. As Baha'is, of course, we do not believe in the existence of evil, but we do believe that the lower nature of human being exists, ego exists, ego whispers in our heart and minds, and if unchecked, ego can pursue someone towards greed. And the history of the faith has shown that as few as they have been, people have been tempted and have been misled by their ego. And ambition and greed has caused them to arise and attack the covenant of God. So we have to be alert. Abdu'l-Bahá says, O ye beloved of the Lord, strive with all your heart to shield the cause of God from the onslaught of the insincere. For such souls as these cause the straight to become crooked and all benevolent efforts to produce contrary results. So we have to be alert. For the sake of the rest of my discussion on the internal enemies of the faith, I like to add to the list of the covenant breakers, as I mentioned, also those insincere souls who have tried or will try to change the nature of the message of Baha'u'llah. to something that it serves their interest rather than the reality of the cause. And then you realize that Abdu'l-Bahá has gone to in details and explained how the covenant breakers actually, or how these insincere people operate. And why would he do that? Is it possible that he thought, if we know it, we will be more alert and more vigilant? This is exactly what he says himself. Listen to this. Now some of the mischief makers with many stratagems are seeking leadership, and in order to reach this position, they instill doubts among the friends that they may cause differences, and that these differences may result in their drawing a party to themselves. Very straightforward. But the friends of God must be awake and must know that the scattering of these doubts has as its motive personal desires and the achievement of leadership. So we have to, in addition to being firm in the covenant, and it will help us to be alert if we knew how these type of people operate. In addition to this, I think we also need to know enough about the faith. We have to understand our faith, its nature, its teachings, its spirit, its administration. And I'm not talking about deep knowledge, or I'm not talking about erudition. I'm talking about enough to know at least what is not the Baha'i faith. For instance, I have prepared just two examples for you, for us to need to recognize what is not the faith. Now, after Baha'u'llah appointed Abdu'l-Bahá as the center of his covenant and established the House of Justice as the institution to which all must turn regarding those things which have not outwardly been revealed in the book, when Abdu'l-Bahá has stipulated that one of the responsibilities of the House of Justice is to decide on problems which have caused differences, questions that are obscured, when he, Abdu'l-Bahá, has clarified that the guardianship is an hereditary institution and that the guardian of the faith should appoint his successor in his lifetime, and that nine hands of the cause of God should approve that appointment, further adding that no one has the right to utter a single word, even to claim the station of the guardianship. This is from Abdu'l-Bahá. And when the House of Justice, after the passing of Shoghi Effendi, confirmed that he, Shoghi Effendi, did not appoint anyone as his successor, and that there is no way to appoint or legislate to make it possible to appoint a second guardian to succeed Shoghi Effendi, then in the face of all this, if somebody wants to be a guardian, or somebody claims to be a guardian, then we will recognize this is not the Baha'i faith that I know. Or after Baha'u'llah says, the understanding of his words is in no wise dependent upon human learning. And Shoghi Effendi, in reference to the revelation of Baha'u'llah, says, an exact and thorough comprehension of so vast a system, so sublime a revelation, so sacred a trust, is for obvious reasons beyond the reach and ken of our finite minds. When Baha'u'llah appointed Abdu'l-Bahá as his only authorized interpreter of the Word of God, and when Abdu'l-Bahá in turn appointed Shoghi Effendi as the only interpreter of God, the Word of God, after him, and when Abdu'l-Bahá identified in his will and testament the House of Justice as the source of all good and freed from all error, and instructed that unto this body all things must be referred, and when the House of Justice welcomes and encourages individual interpretation of the writings, calling it the fruits of man's rational power, but says that such interpretations lack authority and believers are free to accept or disregard them, and states that such personal interpretation must at no time deny or contend with the authoritative interpretations. And additionally, when Shaykh Effendi explains that it is the responsibility of the institutions of the faith to enable the community to acquire and increasingly deepen in the knowledge and understanding of the cause, then when in the face of all this, someone positions himself to say that my aim is to criticize, clarify, purify, and strengthen the ideas of the Baha'i community to enable Baha'is to understand their relatively new faith and to see what it can offer the world, then again we recognize this is not the Baha'i faith that I know. So, once we have detected such insincerities, then what's the next step? It's very clear. Our next step will be to share our concerns with the institutions of the faith and then leave it to them. We as individuals do not have to have the unpleasant task of dealing with such matters. If an individual is needed to assist, the institutions of the cause will refer, will elicit his or her help. So we do not communicate with the covenant breakers, and we leave these power-hungry, insincere individuals to themselves. Now, coming to the unwise good friends, the sincere individuals in the community, first of all, just to see, it is an issue. The House of Justice in 1988 wrote to one of the National Assemblies saying, a greater effort, a greater care must now be exercised to ensure its protection against the malice of the ignorant and the unwisdom of its friends. If we had time, I could give you examples of how out of lack of wisdom, we could harm the faith. You can guess probably. But usually, before I go into how to deal with it, let me say that even the most difficult, the most terrible incidences, you could probably be attributed to the sincere efforts of the friends trying to do their best to live the life or to serve the faith. That's the point. But in spite of that, we still have to take actions. The question is, what is our responsibility as an individual? It's very simple. The first step is to make sure that we are not one of them. And in order to do that, we really need to develop the capacity to reflect on our words, on our deeds, in our interactions, and try to see whether it will harm the interest of the faith. We should develop that capacity ourselves and be able to joyfully prefer the interest of the cause to our own if we have to make a decision. And in this respect, let me tell you that in a letter on behalf of Shoghi Effendi, it's pointed out that obviously something bad for the cause cannot be the highest good of the individual Baha'i. So we'll have to make the right choices. Now, as our responsibility towards the other people who may harm the faith because of their lack of wisdom, then it's very clear we have no responsibility. As individuals, we are to show love and respect to everyone and maintain the unity of the community at all time and at all cost. And there's this beautiful advice of the House of Justice in this regard that I want to share with you here. The House of Justice says, the ideal of life is described again and again and in multitudes of ways in the writings. These aspects of the teachings are discussed in teaching institutes and summer schools and elaborated in many books. Then, in general, it is left to the individual believer as a responsibility between himself and God to follow these teachings. It is not the business either of the believers or of the spiritual assemblies to pry into the lives of individual friends to ascertain the degree to which they are living up to the standards of the cause. Only if misbehavior becomes blatant and flagrant does it become a matter for action, and then it is a matter for action by the assembly and not by individuals. So we should be careful not to, because it will get quickly into the other habits that we shouldn't have, such as backbiting and interfering in people's life and so on. Now, when it comes to the external enemies of the faith, you remember we talked about cultural, material, political, and religious. These were the sources of harm to the faith, external harms. In terms of cultural and material sources of harm to the faith, I think probably our being firm in the covenant and our striving to apply the teachings of Baha'u'llah to the ills of society are probably the best thing at this time that we can do towards these sources of harm to the faith. And I didn't go into anything more deeper than that. I wanted to speak a little bit more on the role of individuals for the religious and political sources of opposition. The first step we can do as an individual for the religious and political enemies of the faith to protect the faith against these as an individual is for us to realize that the faith of God had been in obscurity for a long time. It is now in out of obscurity, but still in its infancy. So this change of position, this coming, whereas the time of obscurity, this tender plant, the cause of God, was protected from observations, if you like, by many external elements. But now it's out, and it attracts observations. It's exposed, if you like. And this exposure invites observations, and the observation invites opposition. So it is natural for us to expect more opposition now. Preparing the believers to defend the faith against these or from these sources really started in the early days of the cause by Baha'u'llah himself. Baha'u'llah calls upon individuals to defend his cause. He says it is incumbent upon all men, each according to his ability, to refute the arguments of those that have attacked the faith of God. So each one of us, according to our capacity. The defense of the faith from these enemies, using the international machinery, the Baha'i international community, as I mentioned, began during the days of Shoghi Effendi and during the the House of Justice since 1963. This has expanded. And I think after 1979 revolution in Iran, this has been a cause of quite a strength in our defense mechanism. And in 1994, the House of Justice approved a document called External Affairs Strategy that had two objectives. One was to influence processes that lead to peace, and second was to defend the friends wherever persecution is. And with this strategy, the Baha'i community began diplomatic and public information work in a broader and more intensified way, and certainly this document brought our external affairs, if you like, to a new phase, a new stage of development. Today, at a time when we have widespread disorder in the world, we would say that the Baha'i community has an impressive record of success on external affairs and I don't want to go into it, but in terms of the defense of the faith, particularly the Baha'is of Iran and recent years, the Baha'is of Egypt, the Baha'i international community, the national assemblies, and their external affairs offices have done a tremendous job. So, but what next in our external affairs? I think that while the overall direction of this very sensitive work will have to remain in the hands of the institutions of the faith, it's becoming increasingly clear that individuals can play a significant role in this undertaking. I do not mean that this is a service that just anyone or everyone can render. In fact, some individuals will protect the faith very well if they do not provide this service. But then there are clearly others who can contribute meaningfully to this process. And often they can do things that actually the institutions of the faith can't. Recently, we had a report from Iran that the Baha'i Cemetery in Yazd, for I don't know, the fourth or the fifth time after the revolution, it has now been again destroyed by the enemies of the faith. In such cases, what do? We normally present it as much as we can, as nice and as effective as we can, to the Baha'i international community, and they go to the international community, to the United Nations, and do their best if we can basically either stop it or influence people to speak against it. And I think it has worked sometimes, sometimes it hasn't worked. But recently, when we had the latest development, there was an article that was written by an individual. No institution of the faith could have done that. And I think that had its own impact, touching people and so on. The man began to write and say, I've heard of this news that this cemetery has been destroyed. And this made me think that it's 160 years that the Baha'is in Iran have been suffering. And I began to see that this persecution began to persecute the adult believers in the community. And years later, after the revolution, I realized that they have begun now to deal or persecute the youth. He was referring to the Baha'i students in university. Then it's amazing that I see that now they are dealing with children in primary schools and secondary schools. And now I hear they are fighting with the dead. You know, he did this in a very sweet and effective way, saying that this reminded me, and then he used a Persian poem where he says, well, if you can't fight the ones alive, go and get your energy and fight the dead ones. So I thought it had its own effect, really, on people. Anyway, the point is that we need to learn how to find such individuals, how to provide them with the space to operate, admit that maybe some, at times, mistakes will be done, will be made, but they expand their work and their activities, and more than anything else, learn how to coordinate, all under the auspices of the institutions, how to coordinate the work of these individuals and the institutions. The success, for instance, that the Baha'is of Egypt have had in this, where individuals have been quite effective in bringing the plight of the Baha'i to the attention of the intellectuals in that country, has been quite outstanding, whether through their blogs or whether through their friendship with the individuals. It has been quite effective. The other thing is that many social issues today have political ramifications. And generally, this in itself shouldn't stop the Baha'is getting involved in these issues. But on one hand, you see, we have the principle of not involvement in partisan politics, and many Baha'is of the past have avoided getting involved in social issues in order not to get involved in politics. But on the other hand, maybe some misconception about this principle of the faith have made the Baha'is to be inactive, if you like, in social issues. have made them passive observers rather than active participants in this. And the result of this is that some of the well-wishers of the cause today see the Baha'is as being aloof or disinterested in involving themselves in efforts that contribute to the common good. And that is not necessarily today a good thing. So we need to learn how to engage in such activities, how to enter into dialogues, how to influence this social dialogue that exists in the world without getting involved in the partisan politics. That is a skill that the Baha'i community needs to learn. The Universal House of Justice addressed the Egyptian Baha'is with these words in December 2006. They said, "You appreciate the global connotations of instances of oppression at home and accept the responsibility of striving, guided by the principles of the faith, and in collaboration with others, wherever possible, to combat injustice for the common good." And I think this is the beginning. This issue has been the subject of consultation of the House of Justice. It is an exciting thing, but we need to move with it with care, with caution, but with determination, and see where this would take us. Because it has the potential. It has the potential to open up doors for us, both for the progress of the faith and for the protection of the faith. Recently, we have received quite an amazing story from Iran. In one of the small towns in Iran, there is a private musical training school. And as part of the operation of this school, they have had annual festivals, music festivals, whereby the parents and the inhabitants of that small town would get together, and the children and adults, the teachers and the children will perform. Now, in this small town and in this music festival, in this music school, there were three Baha'i children, a 12 and a 15 and a 17-year-old kids. So this year, when the festival was to be on and to perform, the government authorities approached the head of the school and asked them that these three Baha'i children cannot participate. The teacher or the head of the school refused this, resisted the government order, because he argued that they are among our best children. In the past, they have tried to do this, and he has succeeded in not listening to the government, but this year he couldn't, because they resisted and they threatened the school. And so in the very last hours before the concert, the Baha'i children were told not to participate. So the children were very mature, and they simply went and joined the audience with their parents. But as a result of this, the other members, both adults and children, who were supposed to perform that program with the Baha'i children, also refused to go to and perform. Some of the other performers, quite independent of this program, independent of the performance of the Baha'i kids, but for the same program, they too refused to go and do their perform their part. At the end of the concert, there were awards being given. Some of the performers refused to go and accept their award in protest to what has happened to these Baha'i children. And one lady went and got her award and came in front of everyone and gave it to the Baha'i children and says, "This is for you." This solidarity that the population of this city showed with the Baha'is is incredible under the present circumstances in Iran. It's unheard of. And at the end, when the program was finished, the report says that almost everyone gathered around the children, encouraged them for their politeness, for the way they handled themselves once they were refused the performance, and one of the teachers in the school said, I envy you that you have a faith for which you can suffer and you can stand so far. The following day, the headmaster, the head of this musical school, visited this family at home to still make sure that the children are happy. And then he said, I'm quite curious to know what is the Baha'i faith. And they had a wonderful session. But these are, you know, just the little the Baha'is have done to be part of the city, to be involved in this musical program of the city has brought about this opportunity. In the case of the Egyptian Baha'is, I think they have even gone further than this. Their interactions with the intellectuals in the country and with different groups in the society have reached quite a significant level, and as a result, two independent filmmakers, non-Baha'is, have produced, each one independently, a film, a half an hour film on the faith. Both have been banned by the government. The result is that the films are very popular even before they are released. And one of them, we are told that there is a meeting of the human rights groups in Egypt taking place in the next few days, hosted by the Government Council of Human Rights, National Council for Human Rights. And they have invited the filmmakers to come and show their film. So it remains to be seen whether it will also be banned in that atmosphere. So really, to be involved with the society, we have to learn and do more because, as I said, it provides wonderful opportunities for the progress of the faith and for the protection of the faith. In terms of how we can contribute to the protection of the faith, about our code of behavior, about our rectitude of conduct, both Kitab al-Ahd, the Will and Testament of Baha'u'llah, and the Will and Testament of Abdul Baha have passages that address aspects of our rectitude of conduct. And for the sake of time, I invite you to study these two documents yourself. I have prepared notes for it, but I don't have time. So, but I do want to share with you a beautiful passage from the House of Justice. You can see it in the booklet, The Institution of the Counselors, in which the House of Justice, in a way, highlights the relationship between the protection of the cause and the qualities and the attitudes of individual members of the community that we have to strive to acquire. It says, in discharging their obligations related to protection, counselors and auxiliary board members endeavor to nourish the roots of certitude, fan the flame of an all-embracing love in the hearts of the friends, combat the age-old habit of conflict and contention, and fortify bonds of friendship and unity, promote adherence to principle and the ethical standards enshrined in the teachings, raise the believer's sight above the limitations of self-centeredness, that they may dedicate their energies to the welfare of the human race and strengthen their allegiance to the order of Baha'u'llah. Both these mighty books, Kitab al-Ahd and the Will and Testament of Abdul Baha, emphasize the unity as and admonish us to avoid conflict and contention. Disunity in a community could be a source of great concern for the progress of the faith, for the protection of the faith. Listen to what Baha'u'llah says. Nothing whatsoever can in this day inflict a greater harm upon the cause than dissension and strife, contention, estrangement, and apathy among the loved ones of God. Flee from them through the power of God and his sovereign aid, and strive ye to knit together the hearts of men in his name, the unifier, the all-knowing, the all-wise. Shoghi Effendi explains that there are two types of unity that protect the cause: doctrinal unity and administrative unity, he says. These are the two chief pillars that sustain the edifice of the cause and protect it from the storms of opposition which so severely rage against it. So if we are to be a force of unity in the world, if we are to establish the oneness of mankind on this planet, therefore the unity within the Baha'i community becomes so essential, and adherence to it, maintaining of it, sacrificing to have it, all what you can say, it becomes part, maintaining unity in the Baha'i community at all costs, becomes part of our identity as Baha'is, part of our desire to serve the cause of God. It is not something nice to have. It is something that is part of our covenant with Baha'u'llah to maintain unity in the Baha'i community. So we again need to reflect on our own deeds, on our own words, in our own interactions, and reflect very regularly. And I mean as regularly as Baha'u'llah has asked us to bring ourselves to account every day, to see whether we, God forbid, ourselves can be the cause of disunity. You know, we have to be so humble and so open and frank with ourselves and allow this possibility. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to reflect on our own deeds. If we are of the type of people who say, well, I don't know why people have difficulties to accept their shortcomings. I would accept mine if I had any. If you are of that type, then we wouldn't be open to this reflection. And we need to have really the certitude that we can change. In case we do have those character traits that contribute to disunity, we can change. With the will to change, with the inspirations they get from the reading of the writings, with the power of prayers, and with striving to do, we can change. But we have to have the will, and we have to have the right attitude. But it is part of our covenant of Baha'u'llah. Universality of the faith is also emphasized in these books, universality of the faith of God. This is another subject of its own, and obviously we don't have time, but it's something to reflect upon. How in our words and in our deeds, within the Baha'i community, outside the Baha'i community, and how in our service to the cause, we should reflect the universality of the cause of Baha'u'llah. Okay, so by becoming firm in the covenant, I mentioned that an individual becomes a healthy or a sound cell in the body. By striving to observe the rectitude of conduct, the code of conduct, then we become a useful contributor cell, a cell that can contribute to the entire operation and the health of the body. And lastly, on our services to the cause, the cause needs many, it has many needs, and servicing and contributing to any of those obviously is very praiseworthy, and each one with his own interest and capacity can find a path of service. But I do want to mention that in the march of cause, the cause of God towards its destiny, probably nothing is as vital as teaching and the growth of the community. Shoghi Effendi assured one National Assembly with these words that a great many problems within the communities would be solved if the believers would more constructively devote their attention to the teaching work. The Universal House of Justice says that the protection of the faith is intimately linked to its propagation. So, therefore, one of the most effective preventive approach for the protection of the cause of God is to teach and is to contribute towards the process that provides an accelerated and sustained growth of the cause. The institute process, the recent global plans, This is one approach, very effective, that I think every Baha'i can contribute to the protection of the cause through growth of the cause, through making it grow. One other service, quite interesting, when we think of our life and our career, is to also raise children who will then protect the cause of God, because this is going to, the faith of God will be in need of our services to be protected for generations to come. The Universal House of Justice said these words to Iranian Baha'is in connection with their effort to give a spiritual education to their children. It says, the friends in Iran have successfully put these ordinances to work, the spiritual, giving a spiritual education to their children, have put these ordinances to work and learned through experience that one of the immediate result of this endeavor is to empower their precious children at an early age to confront difficulties in school, on the street, and in the marketplace, and to show forth heroism, thereby preserving their integrity and safeguarding the reputation of the faith. The friends in other parts of the world should do likewise. And it is happening to some extent elsewhere too. Recently, we have a report from South Africa where in one school we have three Baha'i children only, and these three children learn about the what was going on to the Baha'i children in schools and secondary schools. So they went to their headmaster, who was a wonderful lady, and explained to her what happened. She was very touched by this story and decided to share this news with every member of staff, and after talking to the staff, then it was announced to every to the children at the assembly, school assembly. And the headmaster suggested that every child would write a letter to the United Nations in the defense of the children in Iran. And I understand more than 300 such letters have gone. So the children of the Baha'i children are protecting the cause. But as either parents or to be parents, this is yet another area that we can think of as raising children that can protect the faith. And finally, the last, but not the least, of course, is our prayers for the protection of the cause. It was a wonderful prayer said in the beginning from the Bab. We have more prayers asking God to protect us, so that's fine. but there are also prayers for the protection of the cause that we can say. I came across some of the letters of Baha'u'llah to the religious leaders and to the rulers of the world, in which in those letters he has revealed prayers for the protection of the Baha'is and protection of the cause, in words such as protect the cause from contrary winds, protect the cause from the assault of sharpened swords and pointed daggers. But being in the Holy Land and probably often reading this tablet of visitation of the Bab and Baha'u'llah, I just want to quickly share with you these last words. In part of the last paragraph of this tablet of visitation, if you remember, we read this: Bless thou, O Lord my God, the divine low tree and its leaves and its boughs and its branches and its stems and its offshoots, as long as thy most excellent titles will endure and thy most august attributes will last. Protect it then from the mischief of the aggressor and the host of tyranny. You remember this? The divine low tree, of course, is the manifestation of God. But the text of the prayer suggests, in my opinion, that the meaning of words such as leaves and boughs and branches and stems and offshoots should not be limited to the holy household of the Bab and Baha'u'llah, because in that way it will be not in harmony with the style and the vocabulary of our holy texts. I believe the prayer goes beyond the holy family and it covers and includes all the believers, the entire community, and in fact the cause of God itself. And there are several quotations from Baha'u'llah himself that supports, that I believe supports this, if you like, personal interpretation of this. You can disregard it. That supports this argument. I would like to end my presentation tonight with part of a provisional translation of part of a prayer of Shoghi Effendi in Persian, in which he compares the tree of the cause of God to a tree rooted in the Holy Land, with its roots in the land of divine grandeur in the Holy Land, and with its branches in the five continents of the world, referring to the institutions and to the Baha'is. And then he prays for the protection of this tree. So here we go. O thou almighty and omnipotent Lord, prevent not the growth of this unique and peerless tree, which thou hast planted in the garden of this world, with its root firmly grounded in the land of divine grandeur, and its branches spread across the oceans and distant lands in five continents of the globe. Shield it from the violent tempests of severe tests, future commotions, and global conflict. Thank you, friends.